Right, so good afternoon, guys. Welcome into what's one of the last sessions of Ignite. Hey, you guys have made it here. It's fantastic to see you all, and let's have a bit of fun with some bit of Skype. And this is the exam prep for 7334, which is the Core Solutions part of the Skype offering. My name is Rob Edwards, as it says over there, and I work for Global Knowledge in the UK. We're in the Wokingham office for the guys who know where these places are. I travel around the world and we do these sort of bits and pieces around Skype, Link before that, OCS before that. I also have some experience in SCCM for we can deploy the client agent, so that's pretty cool. But like Mark before me, we have a lot of slides to get through. It's roughly a minute a slide sort of thing. But I am happy to do little deviations. I do train week in and week out, it feels like sometimes, but it's not actually like that. So what we want to do is have a look at the agenda and see what we're going to do on this test. We're going to have a look at the three main categories. And the way I've constructed this is to use the what we have on the actual exam online. So if you go to Microsoft Learning and go and look for a certification, and they've all changed since Monday. So there's going to be some stuff they never told us. It just came out the blue. So they have changed the track. So go and have a look at your certifications, see what they are. You might find that you have an extra MCSE all of a sudden. So it's all good. There's nothing bad. It's actually more of a benefit than not. But if you are going to be pursuing these exams, bear in mind that I'm going to give you some help in that, and the focus on this session is primarily around just dealing with the exam. So let's have a look at that, and then we're also going to have a look at some of the basic test-taking recommendations, and afterwards we can have a bit of Q&A. I guess we're quite lucky in that, this being the last session, we can have a bit of Q&A, share experiences, and so on afterwards. Okay, so what we're going to do is have a look at the three main parts of this. This is the way that the exam is constructed. We have planning and designing Skype for Business, which is going to take about 30 to 35% of the exam. You're going to have a look at the deploy and config, and then we're going to have a look at manage and troubleshoot. And you can see that the roughly 30-35% in each of those areas. Now, what I would suggest you do, if you want to learn this, is go online, go to the actual exam site, expand all the different parts, and then just work your way through each of the various parts. And that's what we're going to do here this week as well for this session. And we'll look at that now. So what we're not going to do on this session is I'm not going to give you what the actual test looks like. It's not allowed, it's not ethical, and it's not a terribly good idea. What I'm not also going to do is go all 400 level, as they say, onto all the topics. Otherwise, we could spend quite a substantial amount of time here. We have 5 days of this. If you attend the instructor-led training or if you do one of the online offerings from any of the MPLSs. It's a very straightforward, nice course that they've written. So what we want to do is prepare to take the exam. Get your mind attuned to the way the questions are formatted and asked. So just give me a wave. Who's done 334? No? Cool. Who's done the Link exams and the OCS exams before that? Yeah, a fair amount of guys. So it's the same sort of format, guys. What we're going to be seeing is things like, I've got a bit of design. Here's a scenario. And then I'm going to ask you some questions. We have some multiple guess type of questions as well. And I forgot to press this as well. So I'll do now. There we go. It's so easy to forget these things. So let's have a look at all of that. This is just a quick view of what we have. Now, as I said on Monday, I need my eyes for this to make sure I'm quoting from the right place. This is what we have in terms of taking the courses and the related exams. There is an exam for 333, which is the voice part. So we're not doing the voice elements today. We're just concentrating on Cortec. But there is an exam for 333. Unfortunately, we can't run out of time. There is the free exam preps just across the hall, but they're closing fairly soon. at 12:45. So if you've missed it, that's a pity. Otherwise, you can go online and use the test exams and practice that as well as doing the 3-3-4. This week, sadly, we didn't have any 3-3-4 practice exams. They're still working them out and deciding what the format will be. Okay, cool. All right, so what we want to do is start off with the first of our three objectives, is looking at planning and designing. And when we look at this, what we need to do is have a look at things like, where are my users? Do we have a very spread out set of users? Or we have small pockets, or do we have a highly concentrated amount of guys? Because that's going to influence your pools, and it's going to influence how many servers you have, whether you have multiple pools, standard edition combinations, whether or not you have things like an SBA or an SBS, where you're going to place those. And when you do the exam, you're going to get design scenarios that will give you those type of things. They will say to you, I've got this company, they have users in this location, in that location, there's X amount of users, they have connectivity links that do this at this speed, and then you're going to have to work out the optimum value. And as the guys who've done exams before, they'll often say to you things like, give me the best answer. And all of the answers could be actually a viable proposition, but what you want to do is pick the best based on the scenario that you've been given. Okay, it's very, very important to read the question carefully and understand it. So what you would do is, once you've evaluated what the distribution is of your users, you can then go and start looking at the associated workloads that you want to have. And this is going to be depending upon the business requirements. So if the business comes to you and says, hey, Rob, I want you to make sure that we have, 24/7 operation, 5/9s, et cetera, for the guys in head office, but the guys out in the wilds of somewhere, there's only 20 of them there. We have a very tenuous link to there. So what is your solution for that? And then you can come up with a solution. So you would need to know things like, what is the cutoff between running an SBA and an SBS? You need to know what is the server requirements for the associated workload. So if I've only got instant messaging, then I could probably run on a slightly smaller server. But I might have a requirement later on to expand that out. So I might have to start with Enterprise Edition and work my way up to Standard Edition. And in your exams, what you're going to be doing is having a look at those type of scenarios where you're going to have to evaluate, make a decision, and then choose the answer. Okay, so it's a pretty straightforward thing. The other thing we've got is the architecture, and we've got to deal with things like SIP domains. So you'll find that companies are being acquired or merged, and you already, you started off with, say, happypuppy.com, and you acquired, happykitty.com or something, and you want to then amalgamate those domains into a single Active Directory domain. What do you do with your SIP domains? Do you follow suit? Do you leave them as they were because the marketplace understands, you coming from, Happy Puppy rather than Happy Kitty type of thing? So you do have to kind of realize that. But what you might end up doing with is having to have a shared SIP namespace. You might need to have a split domain to support that. You might have to go in and get a certificate that is relevant to the number of domains that you have. For example, so we have we're globalknowledge.com in the UK, in the US, and obviously we are globalknowledge.co.uk, but we also have the guys across Europe. So if you kind of started at Norway and worked your way down to Saudi Arabia, there's the associated companies. So when we looked at the SIP domains, we had to decide what are we going to do? Are we going to have one SIP domain where everybody is, .com, or are we going to do one for each country? Okay. So when you get to do your exam, you'll be looking for those type of things where the guy says we either, merging, we're acquiring, we have to decide, and then look for little things where, particularly around certificates, where the action is quite often. Okay, things like edge servers. How do you deal with the edge server certificates? We haven't got there yet, but it's an important part of all of this dealing with planning your deployment. Okay, so we'd also be looking at things like, what sort of server workload would we be doing, and what sort of server would we need? Now, you might have noticed that what's really interesting on the Sky for Business requirements part of the Microsoft TechNet site is that they're no longer saying requirement. Okay, they're going recommendations. Okay, so that's cool. So I've no longer got this prescribed sort of, you've got to have this. But on the other hand, okay, if they say this is what we recommend and then you try and do it with something less, then it's not going to work terribly well. And you'll be doing that in your exam as well. You kind of just know roughly what the idea is. So SSDs versus rotational disks, you know, so 10K RPMs versus SSD for performance. What is the back-end server going to be? Is it going to be just a standard edition, so therefore SQL Express, or are we going to have a full-on enterprise edition pool? And we'll get onto that in a moment where we talk about the different pools. So we'll definitely be looking at, you know, all of these sort of things together. And of course, you guys have all used, and I hope you've used it, but we have the planning tool. All right. So grab the planning tool, download it. It's one of the best resources you can for preparing for your exam. Okay, because everything we do in the exam is built around these different tenants, and the planning tool is going to help you. So number of users, locations, workloads, and those sort of things. Right, I'm going to run out in a moment. So here's a bit about the certificate requirements. Make sure you understand that although wildcards are supported only in wildcard certificates are only supported in some areas, you can actually get away with them. So in real life, I have customers who tell me, oh, but Rob, you know, we've using lots of wildcards and they work absolutely fine. Yeah, cool. Okay. If you go to Microsoft and you say, I'd like to get some support, please, they might go, yeah, actually that particular scenario you've just described, we're not supporting the wildcards, so you would need to know those type of things. So the general rule of thumb is don't do it. Okay. Problem is, they're cheaper and easier to use. Again, also when you look at certificates, you've got to look at the requirements per your domain and your how you do this. So you might have an Edge server, and on your Edge server, you're only going to provide remote access for the users, or you're going to do federation. So whether that's with Skype consumer or whether you're going to federate with other companies, you're going to need a certificate for that as well. Okay, and the clues to look out for in the exam would be where they talk about something like, I want to provide access for my users to Gladys, who works over in, you know, contoso.com, and I work for, in the Microsoft terms, Fabricam or datum.com or something like that. Look for those sort of little clues, because the moment you start doing that, you might be thinking, okay, we've got to have an Edge server, we've got to have a public certificate. Where do I get the public certificate for? How do I deploy it? Reverse proxies come into it as well, of course. So you've got to look at all the certificate requirements and where they're going to be placed and what you're going to do with them. So we all know about the fabulous courses that we attend. And one of the things that we find is that quite often they don't mention the load balancing requirements, so specifically hardware load balancers. Okay, so if you look at quite a number of the actual decks that have a topology on them, you'll see that they don't actually have a hardware load balancer on them. So be very careful when you go to the exam prep that you actually know what a hardware load balancer is for, you know how to deploy it, okay? Not in the sense of I want all the configuration options, but I need to know, do I put it in a standard edition server? Of course not. Okay, do I need it for my enterprise edition pool? Of course you do. Okay, you have to have a hardware load balancer if you're using enterprise edition. So the clue is when in the exam they say to you, Gladys is deploying a standard edition server, but she wants resiliency. What must she do? And then you're going to look for things that say enterprise edition or a paired standard edition pool. Of course, we have that option now. And those type of things. So you need to make sure you look at the load balancing. And of course, we have that thing called DNS load balancing, which is a recommended solution. So if you see any exam questions that say you've got to do a bit of load balancing, look for something that says DNS load balancing, because they require it's recommended. Every bit of literature that you read at some point will say to you, we recommend DNS load balancing. So if you don't know how DNS load balancing works, then you need to go and bone up on that and get it down pat. There's an excellent article by a fine gentleman called Keith Hanna, who used to work for Microsoft, and he wrote the white paper on DNS load balancing. I would strongly recommend you read it, very, very strongly. It's still valid. He did it for Link 2010. Don't be alarmed. Link 2010, 2013, Skype for Business, it's the same family, okay, if you like. So we've had the enhancements in 2013. We've got the enhancements in Skype for Business. So go and look up the load balancing. You need to plan for your DNS. Okay, so there's bazillions of DNS records that you need to do, or it feels like that. So make sure you get all your DNS records sorted out. If you're going to do things like mobile clients, so mobile phones in the UK or cell phones in the rest of the world, okay, handies in Germany, if you like, you know, you got to plan for this. And we're going to look at something specifically in DNS called auto-discover, okay? So look for clues where they say to you, Gladys is going to be doing, you know, supporting mobile devices, you know. And mobile devices don't only mean mobile phones or cell phones, yeah? They also mean tablets, okay? And we've got iThings, we've got Android, we've got, you know, the surfaces that are proliferating at high speed all over the place. I have a very lightweight little laptop here, which is very mobile. So you need to plan how you're going to support these guys. Now, if you're looking at DNS, particularly one of the records that you need to be aware of to start off with is the auto-discover record, okay? And then the other record we look for is link discover internal records, okay? So if I'm going to do any of my DNS planning and I need to design or plan for a supporting mobile device, I'm going to need a link discover internal record. I'm also going to look, if my clients are outside, for link discover external record placed in my DMZ DNS, yeah? So I need to be aware that there's two different places that I could be resolving, and I need to make sure that I design appropriately or plan and implement correctly as well. Yeah. So it's really very important. So there's a little gotcha here, which I just thought of, is that if I don't have a DNS, if I don't have an auto-discover record, right, would my laptop still work? Would I still be able to sign in, register with the front ends? Who says yes? Yes? Yeah? One yes? One sort of almost yes? Yeah? Okay, so what would give us the ability to sign in if we don't have the auto-discover record?
We have other DNS records.
Correct, like what?
Like
correct, yeah, so we could have things like SIP domain, and we could also have, you know, SRV records to help us as well. Yeah, so my SRV record, we're very, very familiar. If we've come from, you know, the old days of OCS and we've kind of worked our way through, and it might be the only record we've ever seen. We've never heard about this newfangled thing called a mobile phone, okay? So bear in mind that you can play around with this. So if I have a mobile phone, will my mobile phone, this thing here, which is just lit up because I shook it, will that be able to talk to an SRV record? No. So this is what you're looking for. When you get to the exam and it says planning, and Gladys is wanting to support, the very bright light, Gladys is looking to support mobile phones, and what must you do for DNS? Immediately in your mind, you should be going, aha, this is what I want to do. Okay. I don't know if anybody attended Mark's session, Mark Grimes, just before this one, but he had quite a good idea, and certainly it reminded me of something that I do myself, is that before I go into the exam, I load up everything I can into my mind. Yeah? Now, you're not allowed to take anything into the exam, so you can't write it on the, you know, your hand. You've got to take off your fancy watches and so on, and you know, take everything out of your pockets, etc., etc. But when you go into the exam, they give you a bit of paper, you know, erasable. Dump everything on there as fast as you can. Write it all down so that you have a little reference, okay? So when you're doing the exams, look for things like DNS, SQL, AD, what I need to do for AD. One of the things that you might find is they might try and trip you up with, do you need to go and do a domain forest and schema prep again? I did it in Link 2013, I did it in 2010, I did it in OCS. do I need to do it in Skype for Business? And the answer, of course, is yes, you do. Okay, but quite often the guys say, well, what does it get used for? And that's the exciting part. What does my domain prep schema and forest prep do for Skype for Business? It gives me my phone numbers, yeah, for example. So that's a voice thing, okay. So why am I telling you about here? Well, one of the things you're gonna find is that occasionally in the exams, they'll check in a couple of things like that. You know, we're gonna do a bit of a chat around conferencing in a bit, and you'll see how we get on with that. Then we also need to look at things like MySQL, okay. Do we use Enterprise Edition? If we use Enterprise Edition, I've got a full-blown SQL Server that I've got to have, right? What version of SQL Server do we need? How do I want to protect that? How am I going to plan for my SQL Server deployments, etc.? So you can see that this could be really, really useful. So do I, with my SQL, when I'm planning for it, do I have a requirement for mirroring, always on? Okay, and you're going to see later on, we've got a bit of troubleshooting around what we're going to look at with that. We're also going to look at our network requirements. Are we going to use ExpressRoute? Okay. Yeah. So if I'm using ExpressRoute, that indicates I've got some connection into Azure. Yeah. And is that going to be a recommendation that we want to follow? Is it going to be a requirement? This is just all part of your planning. And the people who are doing this will tell you. Conferencing traffic and the capacity that we're going to use for things like videos. I don't know about you guys, but certainly where we are, when we deployed Skype, or Link as it was then, the amount of people that came and went, can I have a camera, please? And they were only going to phone video call the guy that was like 6 feet away, but they just wanted the experience. And the demand for cameras went vertical. You know, can we all have that? So the network, of course, consumption went with it as well. So it caught the guy slightly on the hop, but thankfully the novelty wore off. And of course, it fell off back to just talking to people in a normal sort of way, making a phone call and so on. But what you've got to do is understand that conferencing traffic might introduce some errors. And what you're going to be looking at as part of your infrastructure is look at provisioning up servers that can handle that type of that sort of traffic. Okay, you can see on the end there we have QoS. Do we support QoS? Absolutely, it's required. Okay. I say required loosely, but it's a recommended solution, okay? So what are the markings I can use? It's standard marking, all right? So you would have, if you got hold of Microsoft, you said, we have a problem, and the guy said, all right, let's have a look, and they said, have you got QoS? And you go, yeah, we have QoS. What are your markings? And if you use the standard markings, cool. But if you're starting to change the markings, that could be a problem, but it's a recommended solution. So when you hear recommended, when you're doing your exam, you're thinking, aha, here's Gladys, she's got to do, X, Y, and Z. Is there any mention of traffic, optimizing my traffic flows, etc., etc.? Okay. And if you see there's an option there for QoS, go and investigate that one. If you don't know what QoS is, go and investigate that. So these are all the, requirements that you would find as part of the exam. All right. Go and estimate your network usage. Okay.
Excuse me, sir.
Sure.
Express route is, and its requirements are now part of the test.
You won't see them as a requirement. They'll mention that it's possible.
Okay, but we need to understand Express route.
Yeah. Just very high level. You don't need to know any in-depth stuff about it. And if you see me afterwards, I'll tell you something about that because I can't say it publicly. But the idea with this is that you just got to know that it exists and that it's a possible option. They're never going to ask you too much detail about it because it's outside the scope, so thankfully, because that could be quite entertaining. Cool. So network usage, how do we estimate that? So I rather hope you guys have been online and you've downloaded. There's several spreadsheets you can download. There's the bandwidth calculator we've had around for years. There's also the detailed design calculator, if you guys come across that one. If not, download those tools. What you can do is plug values into it and see how much bandwidth they consume and use that as a learning experience. So create yourself a fictitious scenario and say, I want to do X, Y, and Z, but I have these parameters, and then you can use that. And what they will require to do is to know how much the network is going to be hammered by the different modalities. Okay. It changes quite often up to a point, but one of the things I would suggest you do when you ever look at these network usages, go online, because there's different tables. So there's tables for Link 2013 and there's tables for Skype for Business 2015. The tables are absolutely identical except for the Skype for Business one, which is added in the Silk codecs underneath. Yeah. So you might find, although this is deploy and plan, that they just chuck in a little question about, you know, the guys are going to be using Silk to communicate with each other via, you know, on a phone call. Yeah. So do be careful of those sort of things. Okay, so here's a little bit more about Express Route. Now, one of the cool things you can see about here, it's giving us a nice unified connectivity to all the cloud services. What this is, I can see that's better. I should have had these on all the way. But the idea is that we've got a circuit between, you know, our deployment on the left, as you can see there. We've got our partner edge, how do we actually exit our system. And then we go through the customer connection, so that's something we've done, arrive on Microsoft side, and we then have a nice logical connection between our on-premise infrastructure and the Microsoft infrastructure. Okay, so these are logical circuits. You can have multiples thereof. And the idea is that it's going to give us a nice predictable performance. It's going to give us enterprise-grade resiliency, and it comes with an SLA. So that's pretty cool. All right, so if your current provider is not up to the job, you might want to consider this, okay? Remembering that we could have a very large deployment, and this might be a good solution, it might not be. This is kind of the level you would be interested in, and you could then have a look at doing that. And obviously people are going to say, is this secure? Is it going to give me performance enhancements? Yeah, must do. You've got all these bits in the cloud. So you might decide that what I want to do is move my Skype for Business into Azure. I want to deploy some servers rather than using Office 365. So this is a solution. Okay, so you can have a look at that. And what's really cool is that we have Quasana. Yeah. And you can see what we've got is the voice and the video and so on flowing across that link. We need to treat those differently, so we're going to then mark them up. And what we're going to do is do the standard marking. So if we want voice, for example, we're going to do EF, and we're going to do 46 as the marking. Yeah. So thankfully, pretty standard stuff. I have some customers who've decided, for reasons that are not clear, that they're going to change the markings. So obviously, if it works, that's cool. But if it's not standard, it means it's more difficult to make everything work properly. Okay. So there are different queues for each of the traffic classes, so that's pretty handy. And you can see we have voice, video, interactive, and then down the bottom we have the sort of best effort for those products there. Okay, the other things you're going to need to do is understand your server roles. Okay, so one of the things that we used to get beaten up a lot about in the old days of OCS was the number of servers. Okay. So now they've evolved, and we've got to a point where they're pretty standard. Okay, so we've got things like standard edition servers. So what's the maximum number of people that a standard edition server using the recommended hardware can support concurrently?
6,000.
Almost.
6,000.
No. 5,000. Whoever was 5,000. Good man. Yeah, so where does the 6,000 come from? The 6,000 comes from a little calculation you can do when you're doing Enterprise Edition. So Enterprise Edition, when you deploy Enterprise Edition, this is going to give us a lot more resiliency because we've got multiple servers in an Enterprise Edition pool. Okay, so I can have one server in a pool, I can have two servers in a pool, I can have three, etc. I can go up to 12. Okay, so back to our friend Gladys. When Gladys was busy reviewing her customer requirements, and it says we've got 45,000 people and they must all be supported in this pool, must be resilient and so on. Immediately, there's no thought process, it's an enterprise edition. How many servers then becomes critical, because part of the exam question will say we want to do it with the least amount of administrative effort and the least cost. So now you've got to work out how to do this. And the sort of rough, you know, stick your thumb in your mouth and hold it up type of calculation is, how many front-end servers can I have a pool maximum? It's 12. Okay, how many concurrent users can we have in a pool? 80,000. Okay, so 40,000, that's cool. All right, so how do we then provision up the number of servers? And this is where the 6,000 comes in. So you take 80,000, divide it by 12, and you get 6,667 point recurring. Okay, and this is where the 6,000 per server comes in. So it's a very, like, stick your thumb in your mouth and work it out. That's roughly what it is. Okay, so you would then go and have a look with that in mind at the number of servers they give you as an answer, find the closest one that looks reasonable, and away you go. Because remember, quite often, it's the best answer. It's not necessarily the most correct one, but it's the best answer out of the solution, the options you've been given. Okay, so cool. So look at things like the server roles. Now, obviously, if I'm in an enterprise edition pool, I've got to deal with the servers. Now, quite a lot of you guys are thinking, well, I've got a Link 2013 deployment, and I want to go and do a Skype for Business deployment. Does that mean I need brand new hardware? No. Okay, that's the cool part. If you've got a 2013 deployment, your Skype for Business deployment will be able to use that, and we'll be able to use a feature called in-place upgrades. Now, in-place upgrades, which comes up later again, is a very cool feature. And I was, I think, probably like you guys, pretty skeptical about the whole thing. Okay. So much so that when they announced it last year in Chicago, myself and a friend went and got hold of one of the Microsoft guys and said, no, come on, seriously, in-place upgrade. For years, you've been telling us it's side-by-side, side-by-side. Okay. And now, all of a sudden, you're doing an in-place upgrade. Yeah, okay. And this guy was saying, look, I can't remember who it was, but he worked for MCS. Okay, he had a lot of customers. He was telling us of over 100,000 seats. They did in-place upgrade on every single one of those deployments. Okay, consider me skeptical, but we sort of went, yeah, but you work for Microsoft. You have all the code. You have all the guys in the background. And he came back with a very good little statement. He said, look, if we cock it up, pardon my French, everybody will know about it. So we are very invested in making sure that it works. Okay, so do be aware that when you look at your hardware requirements, take a look at the new requirements, compare them to what your Link 2013 deployment has, and if they're close enough, it's very likely that they'll work. Why is in-place upgrade cool? It comes up later, we'll deal with it now. In-place upgrade is cool. Think of what I had to do if I had two, the old side-by-side. Okay, I had to get a whole bunch of new DNS records. Okay, for a start. So if I do an in-place upgrade, I don't need to deal with that. I had different server names and pool names and so on. In-place upgrade, just somebody says, well, that's all right. We'll just keep everything the same. So what it does is, if you look at the actual process, is it just removes the software, puts the Skype for Business software on. It takes a while, okay? But in my experience, and we've tried very hard to break it, it's always worked, okay? So it's a pretty cool thing. So when you start looking at these type of planning and for hardware requirements and so on, it's very useful. Okay, requirements of archiving and monitoring. So archiving is an interesting one. The what are we going to do for archiving? Are we going to archive or not? Are we going to use a third-party solution and so on? This being a Microsoft exam, it's always the Microsoft solution. Okay, so if I have things like response groups, if I have things like a straightforward standard deployment, what am I going to do to make sure that my archiving is secure? Am I going to do compliance? Yeah? Do I want to do compliance? If I'm doing compliance, then I might have to look at things like who's going to manage the server, okay? Who's going to be in charge of patching it, updating it, and so on? And who's going to be in charge of actually managing it and having access to the databases? The databases have potentially sensitive information in. So again, when you look at your questions, what you'll be looking at is, Gladys is working for XYZ Bank. Microsoft always used Woodgrove Bank, okay? So Woodgrove Bank is where Gladys is employed. She's got to make sure everything is compliant for things like SOX, for any of the UK requirements, European requirements, Middle East, Far East, and so on, okay? And if you do that, you've got to have the right hardware, and you've got to look at making sure that you've got ability to store that. Okay. And as far as monitoring is concerned, monitoring is interesting. We have the new core quality dashboard, so you need to perhaps consider things like, am I going to be doing that? If I have CQD, then I might need to provision a separate server, okay, because it's quite intensive. So I might decide that I'm going to move that service off onto another machine, in which case you would then see the appropriate parts there. And then virtualization, which is always the fun part. So when we do virtualization, one of the things we're looking at with virtualization is we've got to make sure that the service we have on a physical server is exactly the same when we virtualize it, and that relies on the host machine. So remember when we look at Link and with Skype, everything is optimized for physical servers. Okay, so I've optimized the most easy one, well, the most easy, one of the easiest ways of looking at this is with a voice. A voice is a very instant, you know, if I make a phone call, the guy can hear if it's bad or not, okay? Whereas with data traffic, we don't really care that much. It'll get there eventually, TCP will sort it out, and away we go. But if I'm looking at virtualizing my front-end pool, for example, I might get some benefits, yes, I can move it around, I might not. So you want to be careful about virtualizing things, particularly with relation to voice, okay? One of the things they've done with Skype for Business particularly is to optimize the code, so it means that it's going to work a lot better in a virtualized environment than we've had before. They did this, they started this in 2013 and it's just moved forward. My environments run a lot on virtualized machines. As long as I don't have too many people on it, it works absolutely fine, but you can hear it. It will start stuttering, so you would need to just go and work out from the example in the planning part of what you need. You need to look at central and branch office scenarios. As I mentioned earlier on, do we need an SBA and SBS? Okay. If we have an SBA, is it a 2010 SBA? Is it a 2013 SBA? Or is it a Skype for Business certified SBA? Okay. Because there's some rules around this. Okay, so for example, I can't have a 2013 SBA with Skype for Business. I can the other way. All right, so back to our friend Gladys, you know, you would get the idea of she has all these requirements, and you would be looking for these little nuggets where it says, aha, I have this particular version, and you'll just pick out the answer that equates that. You know, if you have a branch office, you need to look at things like, is this whole plan around high availability and disaster recovery. So how many SBAs am I going to have at my branch office? Okay. So can I have multiple SBAs? Yeah, of course you can. Okay. It would be crazy not to. So you're going to look at things like that. Look for clues again, like ease of administration, or we're going to have things like cheap, you know, so we want to do it at the most effective cost level and those type of things. And then we get to some really cool stuff, which is, this thing isn't strong enough, is around resiliency for your SQL. So one of the things we're all kind of beaten on the head about with 2010 onwards was mirroring. So we had SQL mirroring. So we only supported SQL mirroring when it was Link 2010 was released. We then had clustering added later on, okay? We moved forward into 2013, we have mirroring, and that's the preferred solution. So I mirror my back-end servers, for example. Now, when we get to 2015, Skype for Business, it gets a lot more exciting, okay? Because in Skype for Business, we can now use SQL 2014, and SQL 2014 doesn't support SQL mirroring because it's been deprecated, okay? So we're going to go for always-on availability groups, and we're going to see more of this later on. But the always-on availability groups versus mirroring becomes an interesting problem for the people who are planning, designing, and supporting their Skype deployment. So what you would need to do when you get to look at this design part is decide, you know, what's the optimum value. So anybody using always-on? A couple of guys. Cool. So I think always-on is a fabulous solution. It's a little pricey, but, you know, it's... very, very resilient. So what you can do is decide that that's a good solution. You can look at clustered instances. You can look at your load balancing. You need to look at your hardware load balancers, and you can also have GeoDNS. They never kind of go into GeoDNS too much. They just say you must consider it. So GeoDNS is something that you need to go and look into in more detail if you're not familiar with what that is. Okay, we need to look at conferencing. So when you're looking at conferencing, one of the little gotchas here is that we can do dial-in conferencing without having enterprise voice enabled. Okay, so that's pretty cool. But it does mean that we do have to have some sort of dial plan knowledge and how to create the routes and the PSTN usages and all those type of things. So what you would need to do is to make sure that when you get to the exam, they say to you, we want to do conferencing and we want to support dial-in conferencing. And when I support dial-in conferencing, I want to make sure that my regions are configured properly, because that's the little catch. Yeah, they might get you to say, create a dial-in conferencing solution. But when you go and look at the dial plans, there's no region in there. So you might actually have kind of just one region in there. You decided to push everything through to your call manager, for example. But, well, I want to do dial-in conferencing, this is a cool solution. So I might have to have multiple routes, dial plans, just to support the multiple regions. Cool. So you're going to need to look out for those sort of things. You got the Office Web App Server, okay, or as we all call it, a WAC server, okay? Web Access Component Server is something that we know that it's a requirement, okay? It's to give us PowerPoints. How do I present my PowerPoint? Okay, I've got to have OOS, okay? So OOS is Office Online Server, okay? So they slipped that one in, okay? Suddenly it appeared as a change, all right? So you can use OOS, or you can use the Office Web App Server, or you can use a Web Application Component Server. They all mean the same thing. So get the latest one, download it. I checked yesterday because I was curious to see if it how easy it was to get. It's definitely no problem. Very, very easy to get hold of. Download it, deploy it, put it in your topology builder, of course. You can have farms of these. So you would need to look at designing to support those. And you can have them inside in the DMZ or outside the deployment. So you need to be careful about when they ask you questions about how we get access to the Office Web App Server from external. Yeah, I'm working from home. I want to make sure that the guys are able to do PowerPoint presentations. Okay, cool. And then Skype Meeting Broadcast, very cool feature. You sign up for this, you go to the the URL, click on that, and you get a different feel for your conferencing, but you can support up to 10,000 people. If you're not familiar with the Skype Meeting Broadcast, go online. Nice little, easy to understand off TechNet article, and you can then review that, and it's very straightforward. Okay. Video interoperability server, VIS servers. Anybody got a VIS server? I'm desperate to find somebody who has, because no one you have. Cool. Does it work well? Well enough. And you also have one. That's awesome. Okay. What's interesting, if you go onto the website, the only VIS servers that are listed are the Cisco ones. Okay. So do be careful. When they talk VIS servers, they're talking specifically Cisco ones. Again, I just double-checked yesterday evening because they've been changing everything this week so much that it's a massive moving, and it still shows just certain Cisco ones. So when you go into your exam and they have the old scenario, you know how it goes, or a question, look for VIS servers, look for little clues that it's going to be something like that. But it's a server you deploy in your topology, so you need to put it in Topology Builder, so you might get like a scenario based around that. So your conferencing is pretty cool. The conferencing policies, so one of the cool things about conferencing policies is that they're very easy to do, okay? But you've got to understand that there's two parts to it. When you're going to look at your conferencing policies, do you want to affect the user or the presenters, for example, okay? So you need to understand there's two parts. And the best place to do conferencing policies? PowerShell. Okay. Yeah, I can go into the GUI. But remember, the GUI does about 80% of your configuration. The remaining 20% must be done in PowerShell. And in fact, if you don't like PowerShell now, sorry, you guys, you just got to get into it. Okay. It's the best place to do all your config in Skype. One of my students recently was telling me he never goes into the GUI, ever. He has the Windows ISE running. He does everything in there. Scripts it, or he just types it up into there. You know, syntax checks it, and away he goes. Okay, so be careful of that. Okay, cool. So let's have a look. What we're looking at here is my Edge servers. Now, Edge servers are the most exciting part about Link and Skype by far, because it's in here that we have the most the most likelihood of a misconfig causing utter chaos. Okay, we can get away with it inside sometimes, but the guys are away. They're in a meeting. They might be at a customer site. Okay, so when we're looking at designing our remote and external access, we've got to understand that we've got to get this right. So you've got to get your federation right. So when I'm looking at federation, I need a public certificate. So look for clues that say, I want to do open federation, okay? And that means I need a public certificate, okay? And they'll ask you for, you know, how do you create the names? Right, so when I'm doing my certificates on an Edge server, what's an interesting fact about Edge server certificates? For the guys who was doing Link, this is exactly the same. My SAN has to have the, or my subject name has to have the name of the Link Edge server in it, or the Skype for Business server. And then I've still got to have my SANs as well, okay? So when you're looking at that, if you misconfigure that, make a typo, it's a problem. So we had that problem. The guy made a typo, didn't work. Okay, when you have certificates and you're looking at supporting guys who are remote from you and they've got to download the certificate again, where are they going to get it from? Where they get the certificate from in a Skype for Business deployment, Link deployment? From the reverse proxy, remember? Okay, so you're going to be looking at anything in the Edge sort of side where the guys are starting to say to you, I want you to set up an Edge deployment for me, and the Edge might, what they might mean is an Edge server and a reverse proxy, okay? Or they might just mean the Edge server. So again, look in your questions, see what they're looking at, and get that done. So very important indeed. Look at things like using a reverse proxy of your choice. Look at things like the ARR, okay, as a solution. They might come up and say, our friend Gladys is working for this company as a contractor, and they have, you know, server 2008 R2 where they have everything on, okay? And they need to put an Edge server in, but they have got no money, et cetera, et cetera. And this is the server they've given her. Well, obviously, we can't use the web application proxy anymore on that because it's an R2 feature for 2012, yeah? So we'd have to look at ARR or something else. So TMG is deprecated, but you can then look for anything like that. So they'll lead you down those paths. So look for those type of key things like ARR needs to be downloaded and installed, or you can, if you have server 2012 R2, you can use the inbuilt web application proxy. Cool, directors are interesting. Are directors a required role in my deployment? No, they're recommended, okay. So they're not required, they're recommended. Can I have a pool of directors? You can. Do I need to put load balancing in conjunction with a pool of load balancers, of directors, sorry? You do, okay. So if you're gonna have a pool of directors, why? Because you want to give an extra layer for the people coming in from outside, yeah? If I want to have multiples thereof, I've got to then have a little chat about things like hardware load balancers and DNS load balancing, okay? So you've got to work these things out, and you'll see little clues in there. Okay, look for those keywords again. All right, cool. Like Mark before me, I've got 69 slides to get through, and we're got 30 minutes left. Okay, so we want to look at things like planning my client and user experiences. So things like contactless, client version controls, privacy, the address book search and downloads. How do we deal with things like if your customer comes to you, or you know, in the scenario here, you get a question that says, we want to update the address book. How do I update the address book? Okay, and you're looking for AB server type of stuff. So AB server is in the what folder? Okay, if you don't know the folder, you're gonna look in it, it's program files, Skype, and you just search your way down, find AB server, and then AB server.exe runs with switches. So some of the switches, they'll chuck it in. So we're actually into command line stuff here, never mind anything else. Okay. What time does the address book server synchronize with Active Directory? Okay. So you cannot change that. Yes, you can change this. It's 0130. So you can change it if you like. What about my clients? Do they go online and immediately download the address book, or do I want to block that? Okay. So there's red settings that you can use to configure and control that. So they will ask you those. Okay. They'll say to you, what is the registry key? And they'll give you a whole bunch, like five examples type of thing. They might not. I'm not saying they will, because I can't give you anything like that. But there will be those type of scenarios where I need to know that. And you're going to see some PowerShell example questions shortly where they actually gives you a good idea. VDI, I don't know if anybody has a VDI. The important thing to realize with VDI is that it's Microsoft VDI, it's not Citrix. Okay. So if you're looking at the Microsoft VDI, then they're going to require that you understand that I could put a little plugin in. Okay. And you've got to deal with pooled versus personal desktops. Okay. And they will expect you to know those type of things. They'll also do things like changing the design for the client UI. Okay. So when I am going to that, I can change the UI experience. There's been loads around the Sky for Business room systems this week. So I said to you, it's just like I feel like I'm on a treadmill sometimes, you know, just running faster and faster, and the treadmill's getting even faster. So what I would suggest you do is just remember the following, is that when I'm going to do my exam, it's very unlikely that they will have updated the exam already to reflect the new changes. So yeah, while it's very, very cool, and you saw all the stuff they demoed if you went to the sessions, just remember that they kind of one iteration back. So you'll need to do that. And if you do have a Sky for Business room system, go in, get down to the little console, play around with it, create yourself a meeting, because they'll ask you to, where do you tap? They'll ask you things like, potentially, like, you know, how do I create a meeting? What are the PowerShell commands to do this? And what are the requirements to do this? What is my interface with Exchange? Okay, migrating and upgrading. We did this earlier on, but migrating platform in-place upgrades. Okay, but what you need to know is that your in-place upgrades can only be done on Link 2013. So if I'm running Link 2010, it's like we used to have in the past, side by side, site by site. So pick a site. Start there, pick a small one that you can manage, and then move on to the bigger ones, yeah? And then just test. But if you're doing a side-by-side, then you're going to look at decommissioning the old servers, and we need to decommission them to get all the stuff out of AD, okay? So we can optimize our AD, because obviously with all the AD rep and the global catalogs, et cetera, that we use, we want to get rid of as much junk as we can. Okay, so we need to decommission it. So when you go through that, there are procedures to do this. Okay, there's procedures to do things like add in your old deployments into a topology builder so you can do your side-by-sides. There's procedures around doing an in-place upgrade, and you must know those. You must know the screenshots. So, for example, I'm going to upgrade to 2015, so I need to put the, the tools on, yeah? So once I got the tools on, then I need to know that I go into topology build and I need to right-click on my Link 2013 pool, go and then upgrade, and then it moves it. You would need to know that and see it happening and what it does. Publish the topology, and these are steps that I'm giving you, aren't I? So you will need to know those steps, because you'll get things like a list of how do I do this, and they'll give you 20 things, and they'll say, show me the correct order, use four. You know, and you think, geez, I've got all 20 of these are valid, but I'm only allowed to use four. So you have to work out from the question which of those 20 things is what they're actually referring to in the questions. I absolutely hate those ones. But do be aware that you're going to have those sort of requirements of knowledge to do this. The bottom one, planning for coexistence with previous server versions, very important. Okay. So looking at things like, how do I work with server 2008 R2? Okay. Are the server team going to be upgrading to 2012 R2 or 2016? Yeah, type of thing. And you'll need to understand the differences in those products as well. So you can see upgrading from mirroring to always on. Okay, so if you come on the course, we have a lab that shows you how to do that type of thing. So if you don't have access to training like that, there are resources out there. Go online. There's MVA, the Microsoft Virtual Academy. There's loads of guys who blog stuff. Okay, go and have a look. But start with the MVA and work your way on from there. Remember, the MVA stuff, though, is written in the past. So do be careful that you're not looking at very old stuff. On the other hand, what I find very useful is I go on to MVA sometimes just to refresh my memory what it used to be like. Because we're all, you know, in the here and now, and everybody's like, wow, look at all these cool features. And then we get to the exam and think, oh my goodness, I can't remember what the old scenario was. So do be careful about that. Cool. What else we got? Right, some example questions. This is an example of something you might find, okay? So in this case, I need my glasses so I can read it here and watch you guys. So what this says, you need to move all the users to the new Skype for Business server, 2015 infrastructure. How should you configure the relevant Skype for Business management shell commandlet? What do you think, guys? This is something that I've seen in exams. Not exactly this one, but similar ones. And what they give you are these sort of, you know, options, and you would get them as a drop-down. So you would need to know the PowerShell commandlet. So get CS user, well, that's a start. And then we're going to look at, is it identify all, only link users, and so on. Anybody want to have a go? I don't know if this thing's bright enough. Can you see the red dot, Vlad? Vladimir? Can you see that red dot? Okay, so is it identify all link users, unassigned users? So look what we do, remove all users. So identify all, okay, cool. And then move, target. You see here, they didn't give you any kind of indication of what it is. This is one of the things that we have with the exams is that they can be a bit vague sometimes. So you kind of have to take a little guess. Well, you know, it's not SQL, it's not link, so it must be that one, we hope. What do you think? Let's have a look, see if they answer. Sorry? The front end. Yeah, the front end pool. So let's have a look. Oh, I can do it from here. Why am I running over here? There you go. Okay, so you can see there what we had. It's too far away. Identify all, move, target, and then the pool. And you can see here in the pool, that is obviously an older version because they've actually specified front-end pool 01. Is that a valid sort of logic? I don't know. It's awful questions. And I've seen ones that are equally vague. So we have another one. So my company plans to deploy Skype for Business mobile app. Skype for Business mobile users must be able to access conversation history and meetings. You need to enable mobility access for external networks. On the reverse proxy server, which two services should you publish? So we have an A and a C here. Is that right? Any advances on A and C? A and B? Okay, cool. I know nothing at this point. I'm simply a clicker monkey. What do you think, guys? So we got an A and a C and an A and a B. Anybody want to have a punt? AC. So it looks like AC has, oh, we had a BC, did we?
AC.
AC, okay. It's a little catch you out thing because one of the things, remember I made a little song and dance about audio discover records earlier on? And this is one of the things you find is that the moment you see anything that says mobile, look for that auto discover or link internal discover or link external discover records. Okay. I don't know why they've put that one in there, particularly in this example, but it's the best example we have. Yeah. I didn't write this one, so yeah. But it's not the Exchange Web Services and it's not the Skype for Business internal web services because the mobile client doesn't use the Skype for Business internal web services, it uses the MCX services. You guys are familiar, you are aware that there's a whole bunch of web services that run. If you're not, you do need to go and have a look at it, at some point. They don't ask you. There's the UCWA, the Unified Communications Web-Based API that we use for a lot of the stuff. So that's pretty cool. So remember I said it's not always the correct one, it's the best one. Okay. So I don't know why they particularly chose that one. I think it's just to kind of throw you off the scent, as it were. Cool. Okay, next. Oops, sorry. Go back one. This is part two. We've only done part one. Okay, and this is all around the deploy and configure. And what we want to do is have a look at these parts here. So we're looking at creating different roles, gateways, trunks. We're looking at server features. We're looking at things like edge servers and so on. This is all around configuring and publishing topology. So as you all know, Topology Builder is the place we'd be. We go to do all of this sort of things. Okay. We also need to look at, one thing about this. If we were looking at a question, what I might be doing is look at things like SQL HA options and Office Web App Servers. And these are features you need to enable in the Topology Builder. Yeah? So quite often the guys kind of leap into it. It's a SQL thing. It's a SQL thing. You got to do it in TB, yeah? Topology Builder. Then we've got conferencing, PIN policies. How do I get the PIN to the users? Okay, so there's a PowerShell command that you can do to send the PIN out. We've got dial-in access numbers. Okay, so how do I do my conference dial-in access numbers? Where do I create them? How do I create them? Okay, and again, as ever, PowerShell is your best way, but you can go and plug them in. All right, mediation server co-location. Okay, very important indeed. Do we do a bit of voice here? Why not? Mediation servers, if you're looking at any of conferencing stuff and they don't mention anything about external voice applications, consider it to be co-located, okay? Because the default is to do that. Look at your trunks and gateways. You'll need to configure those up. I'd mention those earlier. And then you might decide to use Skype for meeting broadcasts. So what is the default size of a Skype for business meeting? 250, yeah. So what happens if I want to provision 1,000 users? Will I get blocked? Sorry, again? Yeah. So what you would do is do something like that. Or you could go, if I want to do very large meetings, Skype for meeting broadcast, sign up to the service. It runs slightly differently, but not a single person will have a problem with that. But you'll need to get the distinction between, you know, 250, 1,000, and 10. It's normally what they do. Okay, cool. So remote access. Okay. Remember that we've got this concept of I'm remote. Okay. So I work for the company, but I'm actually in a hotel at a customer site. I'm on training or wherever I might be. I'm not inside the firewalls. Okay, so I'm then an external user, okay? But to support that, I would need to be enabled for it, okay? But if I'm looking at Federation, I might never leave my desk. I'm always at my desk, but I can be talk to federated people, yeah? So be careful, there are tick boxes and there's settings in PowerShell that you would be asked to give that distinction. So here we have configuring Federation Skype consumer, okay? Now. One of the things you might see, you might not, but one of the things you might see would be something along the lines of, I want to do a search for Skype consumer. Yeah? Can I search for Skype consumer guy? If your total deployment is Skype for Business 2015, you can. Okay. But you're searching for MSA, Microsoft accounts. Yeah? Not, remember the old Skype accounts? So it'll be like Rob Edward 74. Yeah? No at symbol, no suffix on that. Cool. So you need to look at your mobility policies and remote access policies. I mentioned that. Load balancing DNS, we did that, thankfully. My client features and policies, you'll need to go and understand the PowerShell commands, okay, because they will ask you PowerShell commands. You might need to look at things like, how do I deploy Skype for Business Room system? There won't be massive detail. It'll just be a kind of an overview. We need to know how to do that. There'll be things like migrating and upgrading. So how far back can I go if I want to do a migration? I can go back 2010. That's the limit. So it's Skype for Business 2013-20, and that's, so anything in OCS, that's gone. So if you have a customer who's got OCS, they need to either move to Link 2013 first and then to Sky for Business. Why would you? Just get stand up a new deployment. Okay. Look at your users, move your users. So there's the move user PowerShell command that you need to know how that works. Test the guys, do small groups of people first just to make sure that they work and transition. You need to look at understanding how migrating response groups or the location information server work. So LIS is part of 911, okay, so your emergency dialing, but the location information server is quite often used by people just to give location because they don't have 911. We use that, okay, it's very, very useful. So you need to know that there's an LIS server, there's a database behind this. You need to be moving that. CMS or file sharing. So CMS, the central management store and central management server, very, very important indeed. I need to understand what I do with that in the event of a failure, in an upgrade, and so on. Okay, my file share. Okay, how do I protect the file share? You will need to know that you can protect it with DFS. Okay. Where do I place my file share? Do I want to put it on a DFS protected route, or do I want to just put it on the backend SQL, or where do I put it? So when you see questions around that, you will have to make a decision as to, you know, what's the most appropriate. But if you're not familiar with that, go in and look it up. If you have access to a pool, go into the pool, go look at all the different servers, go onto the backend server, go and look on the file share server. See what the file structure is. So go into C colon backslash whatever it is, program files, and go and look in there. Okay. Click on the folders. Investigate the from and to parts. See if you can find a zip file, which means that there's a stall in the replication process. Understand how the replication process works. You know, if you're migrating from 2010 or from if you're doing an in-place upgrade. Okay. Move the guys straight away. Okay, pool pairing. If you're familiar with pool pairing, cool. Okay, pool pairing is a very, very cool feature. Okay, but there's straightforward, common sense things. Enterprise to enterprise. Enterprise to standard, never. 12 servers to one server, it's never going to happen. One server to 12, yeah, it could happen, but it's not supported. Okay. Okay. Look at using GeoDNS for your site failovers rather than pool pairing. Yeah? Okay. There is a bit of documentation around that. Go and read that up, and it explains it, but not a lot. The last time I looked. SQL HA, so you'll need to look at all those sort of things. Monitoring and archiving. Put your reports out there. Deploy your monitoring server. Okay. Make sure that it is available to everybody who needs it. Okay. And one of the cool things that we have is that there's loads of information in there. Okay. Do your storaging. And then there's the media quality dashboard, MQD. Okay. And one of the cool features they introduced was server-side conversation history. Okay. So for mobile phones or devices, I couldn't get any of my conversation history until I went back to my PC. So now we can set server-side conversation history up, and you'll need to go and look at how you do that. And you need to understand the correct versions of Exchange to support that. So Exchange 2013 onwards sort of thing, SP2, I think it is. Okay, so go and look up server-side conversation history. It's a very cool feature. Okay. If you're using persistent chat servers, okay, you need to go and look at how you're dealing with persistent chat. Do you want to dump them, carry them forward? Are you using a group chat clients because the guys prefer group chats? Will it work? So it does, okay? But you'll need to understand all the different URLs and make sure you back it up and move it on. Okay, some more questions. Okay, so you need to add SQL servers to the existing infrastructure. The solution must just not use the current SQL backend server. And what you have is a Skype for Business infrastructure with an Enterprise Edition pool, and you want to add them. So what is the number of servers you should add? 1, 2, 3, or 4. So you're going to add the following roles: Edge server, archiving, persistent chat, and monitoring. How many SQL servers? So you're looking for clues that will stick out things like minimum number of servers. So 3, two, one. You can have one. Okay. It's a minimum. So that's what I say. The clue is it's a minimum. Cool. Another one. You need to implement the unified contact store. Again, if you're not familiar with this, you'll need to bone up on it and work out what it is. They give you a little scenario there. Choose three. Which of those three actions should you perform to implement the unified contact store? Each correct answer presents part of the solution. Choose three. Okay. All right, I'll just give it to you because we're running out of time. So those are the three there. You can see from a server that has this, run the new CS Partner application. Why is that important and why should it stick out for you? Because remember, as far as Sky for Business is concerned, this is run on Exchange server. I need to trust that Exchange server so it become a trusted partner, okay, as they call it. Hence the new CS Partner application. So I've got to tell Skype that I trust that Exchange server, right? And the second one says, from the server that has Exchange to a third endpoint, run the Exchange UC util script. That's been around for donkey's years. And then from the server running that, run the set CS user services policy. So that you would need to know is the a PowerShell that sets that up for you. Yeah, you need to get it up so that it realigns itself. Yeah. Okay, you don't need to, from the server with Exchange, run any config enterprise application that doesn't exist as far as I can know. And then in E is the same thing, you don't need to do that either. Okay, a bit of managing and troubleshooting. I've got about 7 minutes left, so. Conferencing is interesting, okay. So you'll see things around CAA, CAS, the conferencing auto-attendant, conferencing announcement service, objects, conferencing directories. So what this is, me actually going along and making sure that if I deploy conferencing, that everybody can join the conference, whether they internal or external, or we have two employees from the company, both are working from home. They add a third person in, which of course means that everything is then mixed on the front end pool. Yeah, so it's all running on the MCU on the pool, but they're all outside. So we need to have all the intermediate bits working too. My edge server, for example, my reverse proxies, and you need to be able to troubleshoot that. You'll need to understand things. Does it come on this one or the other one? I can't remember, but there's a thing called MRAS, the Media Relay Authentication Service, and tokens that are required to set up these sort of sessions. And they might chuck one of those in at you. So if you've never heard of MRAS or the token passing method, then you need to look that up. The MCU health, so MCUs or multi-point control units are actually on the front-end pool. So each front-end server in a pool or a standard edition server has services on it. Go look in the properties of the service, you'll see it says MCU. And you'll see one for web conferencing, for IM conferencing, and obviously for voice as well. So, and these are the parts of the front-end servers that will support that. So you would need to troubleshoot if that particular server goes down. I have a very cool box coming up in a minute. Troubleshoot multi-party video server, media relays, third-party interrupts. Okay. So these are where you start looking at having 20 people in your conference and questions along the things, you know, how do I optimize the bandwidth, for example. PowerPoint presentations. You can't get your PowerPoint presentation to load. Why not? You know, oh, the WAC server's gone down, or I can't contact it for whatever reason. The PowerPoint presentation is 100 meg, so it's going to take forever to upload, so I need to make sure I upload it in the future. But you need to look at the web server there. Cool. And then we've got troubleshooting DNS. Go look at misconfigurations. Yeah. So look at where they put the wrong IP address in, or they can't spell the name correctly of the servers. Certificates. When you go into Sky for Business server exam, what you need to know is your certificates. You also need to know ports. Okay. So who can tell me what the port is for conferencing that we use? One of the more obscure ones. I'll give you a clue, it's PSOM. Yeah, okay, so you need to know this. For PSOM stands for the Persistent Shared Object Modeling. It's outbound 8057. What's inbound? 443. Okay. So you've got to know these things. And there's a fantastic, I hope you've seen it, but there's a very cool poster that you can download from Microsoft. Go onto the posters, download it, print it out into A3 size, stick it up in your cubicle, and you're good to go. So you need to know those sort of things. Okay, cool. Yeah, file transfers, policy, so yeah, cool, that you just need to do. Client version filtering, this guy down the bottom here is quite interesting. What you might find is a question around something like, you've done your deployment, you've reached the end of your deployment, and now you need to do the upgrade to the clients. Yep, so all the servers are done. What I want to do is stop anybody using an old client. Okay, and we're going to say, what's today is the 30th of September, so by the end of March next year, so March 2017, no one with a version older than, and then you go and look up the version number you want to put in. Okay, you pop that in, and you can block that. So you will see questions around that type of scenarios like that. Oh, my God, that's too high. XMPP, in talking to our friends at Google and other places, you're going to need to troubleshoot that. There's a really difficult one. Don't forget to do the evals. You've got 3 minutes left. Don't forget the evals. See you back home. No worries, man. Okay, troubleshoot your mobile devices. Your address book I mentioned already, so that's cool. HA, okay, and resiliency, that's cool. Some always on. You need to understand always on. There's some advantages here. You can get the slide deck. You can see this. It's the next generation mirroring. You need to pay attention to that. I did have this little slide. Unfortunately, we run out of time. But you'll see there is a screenshot from SQL itself, okay? And you'll notice there that the RTC universal groups are missing, which is part of that. And that gives you a little step-by-step to work around. As I say, these slides will be available, so you can just download them. And then there's another issue here where you're unable to move it from SQL mirroring to always-on availability groups because you have a location of the CMS database, which is incorrect, okay? So you homed it or paired it with a pool that you're attempting to do the work on. So you need to perhaps move it off. So what the guys talk about now is having like a little standard edition where you put CMS, and then you have a whole bunch of enterprise edition servers pools underneath. So you never have any problems with the main part, and your CMS is nice and integral. So you can do that type of thing. This is the one I want to show you. This, you must know this. You can see that a pool will go offline if you have less than 50% of the front-end servers available. It will also go offline if exactly 50% are online, but SQL is not. The gotcha here, you need to have an odd number of machines to make sure the quorum is working properly. Okay, so look in your exam, odd number. So if you have 4 front-end servers in your pool, you actually have a back-end server, that's making it odd, right? So we have 4 front-end servers in my pool, very common. So the fifth one is your SQL. So your SQL goes down, you're dead. Cool. This table is straight off TechNet. Go into TechNet, get the table. And also remember that they might throw in a question about Gladys is trying to start up the pool, but it won't start up because she's got 10 servers in the pool. And what must she do? And one of the things you look for is start-cs topology. Right? It's a new PowerShell command. It's absolutely awesome. And what it will do, go check the status of all the front-end servers in the pool. If anything is not started, it will start them up. But it requires that the back-end SQL is running and SQL Express services are running on all the front-ends. So you might need an extra thing. So look out for those type of questions. Yeah, same SQL backends, the same as we had in Skype, in Link. Okay, SQL always on, runs on top of Windows Server failover clustering. It's actually remarkably easy to do. Okay, and once you've got that on, you can have up to 3-second replicas. So look for that in your exam. File share we talked about, so that's cool. Edge. Talked about that quite a lot. So just remember these things here. Hardware load balancing if you want to federate. Reverse proxies, remember it's been deprecated. TMG has been deprecated, so you can use different reverse proxies. go and look on the supported list online. Nearly there, guys. In-place upgrades. This is the most exciting part. This is straight off, off the web, so you can have a look at that. But you'll notice that the in-place upgrades, and the important part is this part here where it says Skype for Business in 2013. Skype for Business 2010, not supported. Doesn't work. See you next year, Vlad. Cool. All right, guys. Troubleshooting tools, normal ones. Manage those guys there. Last little bit, example questions. Okay, so you need to enable open federation in this example. Okay, is where it's talking about you need to correct the issue and reduce overhead because you have a broken federation relationship. Which of the, you have evaluating a disaster recovery solution, you need to recommend the solution for restoring access. Which Skype for Business Server 2015 should you run? This is a cool one. I'll pause on that one. Anyone know? A or B or C or D? B, all right, there's a B. It is B, yeah. It's not a CS pool failover, it's just a management server failover because I need to move my management server. Okay, so look for things like that with little clues in it. Right, so we finally made it. I've got a couple of flashing lights going on here in front of me, but we've looked at all the three tested categories. We've had a look at the way of questions are asked, bit of test-taking tips. Hope you enjoyed that. I know the guys are all rushing off to get airplanes and so on, so it's the last day. You guys, I hope you enjoyed that. I'll be with you in one sec. Please fill in your evaluation. It should come up. There's some resources there. There's your evaluation. Cool. Right, there we go. Thanks, guys. Hope you enjoyed Ignite. I did. See you soon. How can I help? Keith Hanna. H-A-N-N-A. Yeah. He's a very, very nice chap as well, so. Yeah. I don't know, the media guys will do that, so. Cool. I'm glad you enjoyed it. So you guys back home today?
Yes.
Tonight, yeah.
Driving Charlotte.
Up to Charlotte. I spent 3 weeks at Microsoft Charlotte. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Who was dealing that?
Was it
Sonos
that was there?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Some really cool guys there. Do you know Joey Jones, I think it is?
I don't know. Yeah.
Oh,
at Microsoft?
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Jeff
was there.
Oh, was he? Yeah, he's awesome, yeah. Guys, see you. Have a good weekend. No worries.